Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And you are listening to episode 59 with the lovely Jessica Hagee. She's an author, she's an illustrator. She had a bit of a phenomenon that she started and is continuing, a little blog called Indexed, which is definitely worth looking into.
Absolutely. And recently published a book called The Art of War Visualized, which is a graphical take on the classical text Sun Tzu's Art of War. It's supremely interesting, and that's what we were talking about on the podcast. We were talking about visualized, taking an idea from one medium to another, what that means, how it changes the idea, and the kind of barriers that are either broken down or constructed because of the medium you're using.
Yeah, and a lot of what we were talking about involved sort of getting the tool or the platform or whatever out of the way. It involved putting the actual creativity at the fore by adding these constraints or using these tools or formats to help bring your ideas to life. And that is something that Squarespace really does, is it gets you out of the way. I want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Awesome platform. You may have, if you've listened to any episode, even when they're not sponsoring it.
Yeah, exactly.
I pitch them pretty hard. But in their words, Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. I mean 24/7. I'm texting these guys all hours of the night.
I call them on their personal lines.
What's going on?
I mean,
just to chat, not even, you know?
We say it cheekily, but everything that they say about themselves is true.
Yeah, and I actually think their tagline really does surmise it quite well. Squarespace, build it beautiful. It's what it is. It's beautiful, gets out of the way. It's fantastic. Big fan. Worth checking out. If you don't like it, I will no, I'm not going to make that sort of promise. But here's what I will say. I can get you 10% off if you use the code 10,000 hours at checkout. That's 1000.
Nope. We're good. 140s.
But 1140s.
Yes.
Let's not get twisted. At checkout, 10,000 hours. Go to squarespace.com. They're awesome.
Yes. Thank you so much, Squarespace, for your support and for sponsoring the show. And thank you, Jessica Hagee, for joining us and for a great episode. And thank you, listeners, as always. Enjoy episode 59, Visualized.
I like to think of it like a benevolent demon child, kind of. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I like that.
Little sprite. Yeah, okay. Oh. I'm into it.
Sweet baby Vince.
Grant, my friend.
Could you indulge me? Could you just tell me?
Yes.
What you've been working on?
That was very Shatner-esque, and I'd be happy to. Besides the typical answer of RFP season in the office is being like crazy, and it's just literally every week with like five new things. I've been kept busy with the project me and my friend Mark Ruff are working on, and also a little bit of a pet podcast that me and friend of the show and personal friend Elliot Mattson have been putting time into, which is called These Parts. I won't go through the whole spiel.
I think you've pitched it enough.
Yeah, I think so.
And also, like, I mean, you're on this podcast.
I think, you know, right, okay.
Time and place.
Note taken. And beyond that, just a little bit of freelance work, actually. I haven't done that in a while, so.
Freelance ain't free.
What?
Or is it?
I don't know how to answer that exactly. But I mean, it costs time.
Yeah.
That's relevant to a recent discussion. Grant, would you be so kind as to return the favor? What are you working on?
Like a game of tennis. So I'll volley it back.
Hey!
I am a little sleep deprived, as I was telling you before we got on.
As you are wont to be.
Yeah. We had a video music video shoot. Jeez.
Proof is in the pudding, people.
That went pretty late last night, but it was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and we have friend of the show, Death of the Stock Photo, showing them around town a little bit there.
In town, yeah. I'm so excited. We're going out to sushi in like an hour and a half.
Hell yeah.
Can't wait.
Go team.
No, so I imagine that kept you pretty busy these last few
Yeah,
days.
man, it's been a bit of a crazy time, but it's awesome. Really fun stuff to work on, you know?
Time to celebrate, right?
It really is. So we are, as you may know, we conduct these interviews via Skype occasionally, and we're looking at just a delightful little, we're describing it as, but oh, we have a few. What do you think it looks like, Vince?
I said it looked sprightly. It looked mischievous, like a little elf guy
Yeah, and I
with
think I
a
said the
underpants head.
benevolent demon. Just, it's
Yes.
got a kind of a nice little look there. It's the avatar of one Jessica. Do you say Hagee?
I do say Hagee.
Nice.
Jessica
So do
Hagee.
we. Nice.
Jessica is an artist, an illustrator, an author, and just an overall doodler extraordinaire. She is coming to us from Seattle, Washington. And so let me start by thanking you, Jessica, for joining us. Very excited to have you on.
It's good to be on.
And then I'll selfishly take the second honor of asking you in turn, what have you been putting your time into recently?
Me? I just got back from the book tour for Art of War Visualized, which is I took the Sun Tzu book and drew it in charts and graphs.
No way.
So fun.
Yeah, it was a really fun project and lots of crazy travel, and I have one more trip at the end of the month. And I think from there, I'm pretty much not getting on a plane for a while.
Good for you.
Where did you go?
I went to, let me go through this in my head. I went to St. Louis, Boston, Portland, Atlanta, San Francisco, Sacramento, Minneapolis,
Yay! Good job.
Chicago, Milwaukee, and home. And
Wow.
Austin. I was in Texas for South by to kick it off.
Wow, good for you.
That is, quite the itinerary, I would
It
say.
was quite a long month.
I think side note, on the Sun Tzu thing, I think it was Paul Scheer that he posted on Facebook or something recently, and it was just like, I don't think anyone who's ever quoted Sun Tzu has ever actually read The Art of War.
I
But obviously you read it, right?
Yeah, well,
Okay.
I hadn't read it since, I mean, I've gotten to this point in time, like I'm 36, and I was like, I've never read the book. So I picked it up and I was like, I thought it would be all vicious and violent, like put their heads on spikes, like just this way. And it was actually really thoughtful and like
Philosophical.
cautious and careful and like really like a kinder, gentler sort of book that I thought it was. And it just lended itself to these little philosophical doodle things. So
Well,
it was a good fit.
yeah, that's really fascinating. I didn't know about that. I did know about your one of your blogs. It's indexed. Did I get that right?
Yep, that's it.
It's kind of this chart and graph approach to all sorts of ideas, be they kind of thought-provoking or funny. I read through a bunch of it today. I went on a bit of a binge. It's charming and it's awesome. So if that's inspired this Sun Tzu project by that style, I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, well, that sounds, writing a book and traveling across the country will keep you busy, right?
Little bit, little bit.
I mean, and so it's Art of War Visualized. What better way to introduce our topic for the day,
Quite literally,
which,
even.
as we are known to, we are grabbing that low-hanging fruit and
Yeah.
taking a bite out of that delicious
Yeah.
sweet nectar. Today we are talking about the topic of visualized.
What does it mean to present information and creativity in a visual way? How is it different than other mediums? And things not quite as on the nose as that. Just what does it mean to be visualized?
Yeah, totally. So how long were you working on that book for before that went to print?
I did the first draft of it in the summer of 2013. We had the book deal in the beginning of 2014, and by the time it got art directed and put all together and sent over to China and put back printed and put on a boat and sent back, it launched in March of this year.
That is actually a pretty quick turnaround, all things considered, though.
Seriously.
Yeah, no kidding. So, what I'm initially very interested in is the genesis of this idea. So, you have a very much in the most practical sense of the word, a classical text that's referenced in many cultures for the last,
Many,
I don't
many
know,
business
yeah,
blogs.
exactly, for like hundreds of years, right? And it's very much just a textual document. What inspired you to visualize this specific medium?
Well, the Art of War itself is, excuse me, like clear my throat here. Sorry.
No, we're big fans of throat clearing.
It is, the Art of War though is written in really short little verses, kind of like the Bible is, like really short little verses.
Hmm.
And it's only 300 verses long. And I just kept thinking like, those are great like captions. And I can draw the images that go with those captions. Sort of like a backwards New Yorker caption contest for cartoons.
Perfect.
And it just, it felt like the natural fit because it is so businessy and my charts and graphs are so business looking.
Yeah.
That That's, it felt, yeah. it all just, the little pieces fit together of the puzzle of the project.
Yeah, when put that way, it really does kind of seem like a natural fit.
Did you have to deal with any sort of, is there any sort of copyright or any issues with that?
No, that is the power of public domain.
Yeah.
Giles translation. Lionel Giles was a British guy who translated the Chinese, I think, in 1910. And so his translation of all the Sun Tzu translations, as I go down this nerd hole with you, was the most succinct and clear to me. And the translation was very straightforward and he didn't get really flowery or wordy with it. So that version also felt like the cleanest and easiest to work with for me.
Fun.
Yeah.
Excellent. That said, did you run into any sort of troubles converting one medium to another with the maybe passages that weren't so easily visualized?
There were a couple hangups because Sun Tzu references different armies. And so when you've got just like this random proper noun that comes at you out of nowhere with very little context around it, It's kind of hard to just draw that non sequitur into the thing. So I had to go with the bigger metaphor of the sentence he was saying and not dwell on like the specific army he was talking about.
That is a very unique problem to the medium, I would say. That's interesting. Would you say it was a fun exercise or did it seem more like a kind of a duty to do?
It was one of those like, I bet I can do this. And now I have to do it because I posted like 2 chapters online and there are 13 chapters and I have to finish it.
I get what you're talking
about. That's interesting. I feel that way with like, especially with filmmaking stuff. If there's like a story that I've really, really thought through or written, it's like you have to get it out.
Owe it to the idea, right?
Well, no.
Yeah.
To me, it's more like I need to get it out of my head. Like I can't escape it now. It's like it's stuck there.
Yeah, and if you don't give yourself a deadline for that stuff, it just sort of like sloshes around in your brain and just taunts you until you get it done.
That it does. Grant has often regaled me with the fact that creative loss is one of his biggest fears, an idea that goes unrealized. So this isn't your first book, though, is it, Jessica?
No, this is technically my third book.
Wow, so that brings me, I'm professionally segued to my own question. As someone who works in both the medium of printed word and visualization, what are some of the contrasts you see between, you know, working in each of them? Is there one you prefer? Is there specific challenges to using them together or separately?
I used to be an advertising copywriter. So
you don't say.
Speaking to one.
Yeah, that's me. That's me.
I feel all your pains through the microphone.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But so I was always really sort of grammar oriented. And visuals, to me, have a sort of a grammar. Like you read from this corner of the page down, charts and graphs fit together like this. You can use scale to show what's important. You can use distance to put a sentence in a visual format. So there's a visual grammar to stuff. And as long as I follow that grammar, if I know the joke ahead of time, I can build a visual punchline. So it's, as long as I have that sort of background, like where the words fit, I can put the story down visually.
Constraints. I mean, yeah.
That is very insightful.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, you've been kind of working in a similar format then for a fair amount of time. How did that first come about with Indexed?
What was kind of the birth of that idea?
Yeah, I was... like I said, I was a copywriter and I was going back to school for my MBA because my brain just felt like it needed something.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many charts and graphs in my MBA program, just used in every class to convey all sorts of ideas. And I was just sort of farting around with stolen office supplies and Blogspot, which was totally free. And I had read that every writer needs a blog, but I didn't want to write like, this is what I did for breakfast or like weird poetry or something. So I started drawing little weird charts and it just took off. And now I draw little weird charts all the time.
And you're in some ways famous for it, right?
It's weird. The internet has room for everybody. So you can literally be the person that draws weird charts and graphs for a living.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, extremely amazing. That seemed hyperbolic, but it's true. It's really fascinating to me because when we talk about visualization, as I struggle to pronounce, you have a very specific style of that in your blog and in now this book. It's almost a bit mathematical, which sometimes can seem at odds to the art of creation, yeah, right?
Quote-unquote creativity.
Exactly. People sometimes, and people whose opinions I respect, man, I'm struggling today. They sometimes think that mathematics or process don't have a place in creative genesis. But I mean, I personally disagree. I would just like to hear a little bit about the specific constraints of your style, not to pigeonhole you into the, you know, doodle graph maker.
Well,
but
I think it's fair.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, she's got a speciality. Right. Yeah. So what do you like about that medium and what do you maybe dislike about it, or what are some of the constraints or challenges?
The one constraint that I gave myself just for the blog is that I have to draw on 3x5 index cards, which if you hold one, there's not a lot of space to put stuff.
No, so it's not a lot of inches.
Yeah, you have to be really concise and your piece has to be really clear. And just that alone forces me to be really... make it fast, get to the point sort of a thing. And the thing that is the weirdest for me on the internet is sometimes I do something and I'm like, this is really cool and I'm really proud of this and this is a good piece. And you put it out there and it's just, you get like a yawn from the internet. And other times you just throw something up there to throw something up there and you're like, this is okay. And the internet just seizes upon it and is like, this is my favorite thing ever. And
crazy.
You're like, why?
Why do you like this?
I don't know why you don't like what I like.
Well, that's a thing though. That's like a kind of a dangerous game too. That I think you kind of have to, right at a certain point, gratify yourself, and you can't put too much external validation on it. But it's also, the internet is like, it's unpredictable.
It's
we're
contagious.
Struggling over here.
Yeah.
No, it's unpredictable, but it's also formulaic. You know, it's like, why does X picture get X amount of likes versus X picture? You know, it's like,
oh, it's a
puppy. Is there, you know, it's like, those
right.
I know that's like simplifying it, but really that is the truth. It's like, there are some things that are just naturally kind of lower denominator and you might not love them on the level that you love some other pieces, but they maybe speak to a different level of the internet, the collective internet intelligence.
Oh, heck yeah. Kittens and bacon go everywhere.
Right, yeah, it's a thing.
And so you could theoretically do only bacon-related charts and just reap the rewards, but that doesn't seem like your style.
You know what? I could also like just take pictures of kittens and make GIFs with lasers coming out of their eyes and do that all day, every day, and I could probably make a living at that.
You know, actually, that does not sound like a bad idea, so maybe my letter of resignation.
Some wheels turning. So actually, that's an interesting point, though, and maybe it will inspire Mr. Vince over here to quit his job, but what was the point that you stopped being an advertising copywriter?
It organically sort of happened that over time I was just getting more assignments and more projects to just draw things. And it was a lot more just satisfying both financially and from a time perspective and from an artistic perspective to just make these really cool things that I could sort of aesthetically own, like as my own brand. So every time I did another piece of work, it was like another advertisement for me. Mm-hmm. So that just kept going. And eventually, like, the work that was coming in for advertising stopped being worth doing, yeah. I guess.
How long do you think that took from like, oh, hey, I'm starting to do this thing. I'm starting to doodle stuff. I'm like going out on this.
Yeah, I think I hung on to working in advertising longer than I probably should have.
Sure.
Because I was like, you can't just quit your job and draw stupid blog
That's
things.
Not
like,
allowed.
You know, like there's something.
That's against the rules.
Yeah, it was like, you silly child. And then it was like, no, actually, this is more fun and this is a good thing.
It's okay.
So this is striking a chord with me as someone who is a copywriter and who sometimes thinks I have the best job in the world and sometimes thinks I have, well, not the worst job in the world, but a not great job. I would like to get your thoughts, Jessica, on a specific frustration of mine. And that is, I work with a lot of designers as part of my job and a lot of art directors and just general artists. Mm-hmm. And when they share their personal work or their professional work, I feel like they have the better end of the bargain. They can make something and post it to the various social media channels or to their portfolio or their blog. And people can, in the span of maybe 10 to 15 seconds, really get a pretty decent appreciation for the work. I don't necessarily feel the same ability to do so. And as someone who had to showcase herself as a writer for at least part of her career, and now gets to showcase herself, or gets to, or does, as a more visual artist, I'd like to see kind of where you fall on that discussion, if that's clear enough.
Oh, no, I totally get where you're coming from. Because as a copywriter, sometimes it feels like you can throw things at the wall and you just hope that your art director, like, sees it.
Yes.
You know, and you just, you're like, please see this. Like, please see this as it is. Like, I tried to even, like, you put headlines in weird fonts that you know they like. And, like, you try and sort of, like, prime them to work with you and get the stuff that you want put into layout. And a lot of the times with copywriting too, you send an email and it's this beautiful, elegant, beautifully constructed email, and you know that nobody cares, right, about your craft.
Yeah, that's how I feel sometimes. I feel like I can put up a well visualized strong headline, and that shows off that I can write a headline, right? But when it comes to my longer form copy or my, you know, concepting ability, I find it very difficult to kind of get that across in the age where people want to just digest content super fast.
I would say for you, if you really just want to put your copy out there, draw it in a Sharpie and scan it in, because then all of a sudden people see it as like a deeper emotional level, and all of it, there's thought put into it, and like they just see it a whole different way.
I was just gonna say you should just find a visual style of anything and then just replicate it over and over, like, because then it becomes a thing on its own. It like has its own, like, I mean, it's super interesting hearing you guys, like, watching Vince formulate this and then thinking about what you've done, Jessica. It really is that, like, you have just created a visual style for your words, for your thought process.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's the same exact thing. I mean, maybe hers is more visual than yours would be, mm-hmm. but it doesn't need to be that different. And I think really, like, and this isn't a challenge, but maybe it is. I think a good copywriter should at least be thinking visually, or should be able to present words, because words are experienced not just as words in the mind, they're visual. You have to see words. So, like, even if it's just a font choice or a formatting thing, I think it's your responsibility as a good writer, as a conceptor, as an idea person, to actually think of that when you're doing it and to present them correctly, right?
I think that was really well said by both of you. So,
you guys, we did it. We solved everything. Let's get it here.
Actionable advice on 10,000 hours. Now I've heard everything. No, that's, I think you really summed it up eloquently, Jessica. And it's just really interesting to me to hear a person who went from doing something that I do to doing something definitely more visual and artistic. I would never consider myself, I mean, to put it in the most severe air quotes of all time, qualified to do a visualization of a classical text. That seems outrageous, right? But
okay, that I'm not qualified thing. Like, I went from being in random little ad agencies to not being invited to client meetings to pitch like in-store pop-up end caps, to being invited to conferences and talk to like 2,000 people. And that happened in like 3 weeks, and I didn't change.
You just picked yourself, right? You just stood up.
Yeah, I just said, I'm going to go do this work and like throw it on the internet. And so like that whole like qualified thing, that's don't go there, because it'll just hold you back.
Well, I think I totally agree. The air quotes are justified, I'm hearing. So we had an episode not that long ago called Raising Your Hand. And that's essentially what you did, right? You said, all right, I have this cool thing that's in my brain. I'll put it out there. And it led to a massive change. And I think it's awesome.
It's very much in the like ethos of like Seth. A lot of Seth stuff. He's just picking yourself. Like, that's what I was referencing there, is like, no one's going to pick you, right? I mean,
well, someone might. You might pick you.
Right. No, I mean, that's who has to pick you, is what I'm saying. Even for someone else to, quote unquote, choose you, I think you have to choose yourself.
That's well said. I mean,
well, and it's not Seth, even, I think.
it's not even about sort of like throwing a flag up on top of a mountain. It's just sort of like nudging stuff just out there.
Yeah.
You don't have to be super brave to have a blog. You just draw stuff and throw it on the internet.
That's a pretty quotable line, I think, especially for 2015.
Yeah.
You don't have to be that brave to have a blog. But it's true. It's a great, the insight is very true, is that you don't really, if you boil it down to the fact, you don't risk that much by putting your ideas and your work out there, right? You owe it to yourself to do that.
Yeah, and the internet's big enough too that you will find somebody who gets you.
Totally.
Like, somebody will crawl out of the woodwork.
Many people, right?
No. Fans, how many? Oh gosh, yeah, that's that.
Say
somebody. I don't know. I think it's just 1,000 true fans. Like, anybody can survive as like an artist or as a creator with 1,000 true fans. Maybe it's David Kelly or something.
We'll try and show notes that.
Yeah. Okay, so I had a question for you, Jessica. I was thinking about, so like the medium and the constraints you've given yourself. I think it allows you, I would imagine, especially at this point, to relatively quickly, like, test your idea / actually just create your thing. You know, if we're thinking about a 3x5 note card, you can, obviously it takes time and energy and it doesn't just happen always, but ultimately you could sit down right now, you could pull out a note card and you might have something stewing. You might be able to just do it. I found like with some other formats, it's like I think of filmmaking a lot. I think in those terms a lot now, but it's just like, that is like such a big scale and it oftentimes takes so much to actually execute on the vision. Do you have any other projects or things? You know, a book maybe is one thing, but any other things that like take longer or aren't as easily executed? I don't mean easily in terms of, I just mean.
No, yeah, really. Because I can sit down and noodle out like 5 or 6 cards.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm doing oil paintings, you know? Like,
yeah, the barrier to creation is just lower.
Yeah.
Right. And I think I stumbled onto that accidentally, but it's been a fact that's worked for me.
Sweet.
But making longer form stuff or bigger scale stuff or working on assignments for clients that are just absolutely complex, those things, most of the time it takes is like in advertising, talking to people and getting consensus and getting approvals done and doing all of the like very long conference calls about these like 28 projects that we're drawing. Like, that takes longer than the actual work sometimes.
Do you like that?
No.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if I could just sit and draw stuff, put it in an envelope and send it off to someone else to do all the sales stuff for, that would be great. And if you know anybody who would like want to do that for a job, that would be
pass them along.
Seriously, I mean, I think about that a lot. Like, thinking about clients, client service stuff versus like productizing, even.
Yeah, and when you are an independent artist, you're not just an artist. You're the client service person. You're doing your books. You have to do all your marketing stuff.
You're your own agent.
Yeah, you're your own little company. You have to learn all sorts of weird little chores.
I mean, that is the thing to kind of flip it on its head that I love about writing, is that like at the end of the day, if I have an idea for a paragraph or a passage or a story or a thought, it takes me next to no effort, literally a barely non-zero amount of effort just to put it down on a page.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Microsoft Word is cheap as hell, and you can make your entire life off of like a piece of $75 software.
Google Docs is even cheaper, and
seriously,
Open Office,
a piece of paper in my own blood is even cheaper than that.
Well,
I don't know about the blood. That's getting more into fine art. Like, you could actually sell that. Sorry, my dog's barking it.
No, that's awesome.
What kind of dog? We're huge dog fans here.
I've got a beagle.
Oh, beautiful. What's his or her name?
Her name is Ruby.
Ruby, hey.
You should have said her name.
That's perfect. Wow, on cue. We couldn't have drawn it up any better.
Hey, Ribs. There's definitely some sort of like postal service employee coming through the house.
That's right. If the barking is too prolonged, we'll just edit it. So if you're hearing this now, that means we didn't edit it.
Or we probably won't edit it either way.
No, we're definitely not editing it at this point.
We're big fans for false promises.
So
Ruby just walked away, so I think we're good.
I have kind of like maybe it's an overarching kind of sumerical, a question. Which do you prefer? Do you like illustration or do you like writing?
I think I like illustration more, especially as I start playing with like painting and ink and like, do I really want to be drawing graphs for the rest of my life? Or should I spin that off and like make up another identity and have like a spare career somewhere? Yeah. So just playing with all that stuff is really fun for me right now.
I feel like thinking about it, I listened to Elle Luna. She was on Design Matters pretty recently. And like, there's a lot of similarities, I think, between your philosophies, or at least between your career paths. Are you familiar with her at all? Yeah.
Yeah, she has, we have the same agent and editor, and we're going to be on the panel in New York in like a month.
Ref of all time.
Nice. That's fantastic. I was listening to that, and like I'm familiar with like the crossroads of should and must, but like at least relatively, but I was listening to that, and I had done like a TEDx talk recently, and I realized like as I was listening to that, I was like, oh, we're talking about the same thing. Like mine was called Stuff Worth Doing, but it was just the same exact idea. It's like really weird to like...
Well, it's a pervasive concept, right?
Yeah. Okay, question though. So I'm thinking about like what you've done, and I think... like things I would like advocate for is even when we're talking about writing and we're talking about the ability to get your idea out. Sometimes that means tightening the constraints or like picking a specific format. But I feel like the benefit of like multi-skill too, right? I mean, that's maybe something for like that. I'm not actually telling you to do this, but like if you could pick up even like some design stuff, right? Then you enable yourself and you give yourself access to that. Or even like, but like us doing your website on Squarespace, that totally enables the creator, you know, it's like,
absolutely
gets it out of the way. Cause I mean, I think that's really, when we're talking about like visualized, like the kind of precious and a really powerful thing is the idea. And so whatever you can do to like knock over the barriers between you and the execution, it's better.
Right. So there's like an idea, there's like a layer where you can like communicate the idea to someone on a kind of a primal level, and you could explain it, you could get in person, you can get thoughts out. But like to be able to summarize it in a way that people can download it with their eyes and understand it in their brain in a matter of seconds, extremely powerful.
Yeah. And as soon as you don't need to have like the most perfect style of visual stuff, if you can convey the idea and you can do that like 3 or 4 times, instead of making something like accidentally ugly, now it's just your look.
Yeah.
And so I mean, if you can replicate your style, it's your style.
Not to be too preemptive, but you've had a lot of quotable moments on today's show.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But it was really well said, right? If you own a style and it's a style that people are familiar with and ready and prepared to digest, I mean, that's even something we come across in terms of like sound engineering in our making a podcast. If people are prepared and ready for a certain sound, you don't have to have absolute state-of-the-art equipment and sound quality. You can have something that sounds reliable and people are ready to understand it.
And frankly, especially in the design and art direction world, we're so seeing so much stuff. It's so visual. It's like, everything is almost too perfect oftentimes, so if you can kind of fuck it up a little bit, that's for the better.
Yeah, perfection is perfect.
Don't kern shit anymore, just done.
Kerning is dead. You heard it here first.
Yeah, but here's the funny thing, that like undesign, as I would call it, or I would look at it, is like actually so hard. I realized like coming up in the design world and then trying to like make it like shitty good.
Yeah.
Really difficult.
You know what you need? You need a copywriter to draw it for you.
Well, good advice. He's got one.
You gotta get Vince.
All right, I'm on the case. I've been like trying in like the backest part of my brain to concoct a segue for the last 5 minutes,
and this is
but
what you came up with?
Literally
Was
nothing.
that
Yeah, so then I
referencing
decided I
ability?
was gonna go head on. We're gonna do what we call an off-topic topic, Jessica,
Awesome.
where we abandon the current conversation for something that's kind of like a non sequitur, something different.
We drive out into the middle of the desert and we kick it
Essentially,
out of the vehicle and we drive away.
metaphorically, we do that.
We'll probably come back to it though.
And we thought, since we're both big fans and you're in Seattle, Washington, of all places, that we'd talk about coffee.
Okay.
Do you like coffee, Jessica?
Yeah, I do drink a lot of coffee, and I drink East Coast coffee in my house, so I'll make a pot of really hot, weak ass, like almost clear stuff.
Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
Yeah, oh, worse, it's Yuban, like the cheapest kind.
What's wrong
I
with
have
you guys?
never
I
heard of
don't,
that.
okay, it's
Whoa,
terrible.
whoa, whoa.
No one likes it but me, so it's all for me, and I don't have to share. But people come over and see that in the house, and they look at me like I'm some sort of traitor to Seattle.
Well, to be fair, Seattle has amazing coffee. Not only is it the, headquarters of Starbucks, which, people have their own opinions on, but there's such good local craft coffee and independent coffee. It is surprising to me. Now, you won't hear that much protest from me. I'm a huge Dunkin' Donuts fan, and I think a weak but hot cup of joe has its place in the world for sure. It is fuel for your mood and your brain and your body, and sometimes you don't want to like pour over and brood over an artisanal cup of, however convection method you use to brew this, morning's coffee. That said, it's interesting that that's like your main go-to.
Nah, that sucks. That sounds like the worst.
What? Grant, no!
Sorry, you were vacillating so hard there. I had to get to the
You're
point.
trying not to be mean, but it's okay if you are, because I can
No,
take
I
it.
legitimately like.
Vince, just come on.
Grant, all right, here, I'll reference it through a different beverage. There are days that I want a $8 bottle of craft locally brewed beer.
Sure.
And there are days and occasions that I want a 60 cent bottle of a Grain Belt Premium.
Sure.
Oh.
So, that
Are there
said.
any days you want to pour some water on like three beans and drink that? Are there any days?
I don't know
I'm
how
sorry. I'm just
necessarily.
kidding. I'm being unnecessarily confrontational. I had no stake in that. I just didn't like how soft Vince was being around that. It's just like, you know what? Come on.
No, I think there's a level of appreciation to
So
have for.
is that the only coffee you like to drink?
No, when we are out, I'll totally get an Americano with like four shots in it that's like
Sweet.
super
Okay.
strong and
Now
like
we're talking.
leathery.
Here's what I like about this, though. What you're doing is, so maybe to put it in the beer metaphor,
Sure.
I'll just drink PBRs all day for a month. Oh, all day for a month? What does that mean? But then
Have
when I go
done.
out, maybe I'll go get a nice craft microbrew and
Exactly.
it'll taste better for it because I've created space for the quality of my life.
I like the contrast idea. That
You've
goes
suddenly
with your
flipped it
like
so well.
good gymnast.
Wow. So a second ago, he was literally insulting you, Jessica, and now he's totally on board.
And can I further my point by saying I created space for the compliment by the insult?
Wow, this is suddenly
Well,
becoming next
I
level.
did walk right into the insult and just bring my like belligerent, like
Yeah,
I like
you
shit
flew the
coffee
flag pretty
mood.
high.
It was like she was like putting her hand in your face and you were still trying to like say like, "Oh no, yeah, it's so sweet of you. Thank you. Thank you." She was like punching you.
It's just that like I understand that philosophy, and as someone who's like has to spend time around these like craft beer aficionados, I get the most
Yeah.
insufferable commentary
It's
about how I'm
terrible.
not allowed to like the things that I like. And the same goes for music. I have friends who are total music
The
snobs and
snobs.
they don't like that I like dance music. It goes for literally any
Actually,
field of
let me say
anything.
this. I actually appreciate it. This is a ref to your about page with your email address on there, the Yahoo. It's like your old index page, and it's like, yes, email snobs, I get it. It's a Yahoo address. I've had it for 20 years, and it still works, right?
Yeah, totally.
That's perfect. That's a perfect
Yeah,
example.
awesome, totally. And it's the same idea with the coffee. I'm all about
Exactly.
it.
And if you're gonna have like an email out there that's just like gonna just catch spam like a giant bucket, like it's gonna be a Yahoo account.
Oh, it is. It is for sure. Hey, so when you do have these occasional bouts of high quality artisanal coffee, where do you like to go in Seattle? What's your favorite go-to place? Do you have a coffee shop or a cafe?
Yeah, I live about 6 blocks away from a bluff that that's right above a cliff, goes down to a beach. And at the top of the bluff is a place called Cafe Fiore, and they are totally those like artisanal, hand pulled on the Italian machine, organic, free trade, everything, $20 a pound coffee.
Gluten free.
Wow.
And it smells really good in there every morning.
I can only imagine. That sounds lovely. Wow, what part of Seattle do you live in? That sounds pretty scenic.
I'm over in Ballard.
That's my favorite neighborhood in Seattle.
Is that serious? Or are you just...
Yeah, I'm dead serious. Okay. That's where I spent most of my time when I visited. It's a really fun part of town. Well, that's awesome. It's great.
Benny, what about you? What's your coffee situation look like?
Well, it's already known that I'm not above drinking the absolute dregs of coffee. Part of coffee for me is not only the taste, it's the effect. Like the caffeine rush. Yeah. I'm a big fan, right? And it sounds like oversimplified. It sounds stupid, of course. Like people like caffeine. But to me, it's like, it's ritualistic. I don't have a coffee maker and I don't buy instant coffee and I don't like to make my own coffee. I like to walk out and get it. Even if I'm only going to a Caribou or a wow. Starbucks, or to make a local reference, a Dunn Brothers.
Dunn Brothers, right by you, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes I get it on my walk to work. Every weekend, both days, I go out and I get it. There's a ritual. I call someone in my life on my walk over to the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's my parents. Sometimes it's a friend I haven't talked to in a long time.
Don't have to talk to your parents that long?
Yeah, right. Oh, well, I live really close to a Dunn Bros, so it's...
Yeah, so you don't have to talk
a few feet. Oh, yeah.
Hey, I just want to say I've never once received a morning walk phone call.
Grant, we see each other like twice a week every week. So it's not the same. No, I love coffee. In many ways, I need it. I'm fueled by it. So I like to incorporate it into my life. If we can have a meeting and it could be a coffee meeting, it's the perfect meeting for me.
Very progressive of you. Do you like cold press?
I love cold press. So my rule is after 10:30 a.m.
All these rules and specifics.
Yeah, for no reason. After 10:30 a.m. in the summer, I get cold press. Before May 1st, it's always hot coffee.
I'm experiencing a new Vince today. I don't know what it is.
It's very specific.
Yeah.
And my
Did
favorite...
you know that if you take coffee and you put it in an ice cube tray, you can have coffee cubes?
Yes.
So then when you put ice in your coffee, you don't dilute the caffeine.
I pinned that recently.
That sounds like so much work, though. But it does work. I've had coffee cubes before, and it tastes like coffee. It didn't really improve the experience that much for me. I'm going to be straight with you guys. It didn't really make much of a difference.
Thanks for being straight with us.
It tastes like coffee.
Yeah, it still tastes like coffee. For the record, my favorite place in the city is Dunn Bros. Even though they're kind of a local chain, they make strong, good, bold coffee.
I'm gonna give a shout out to Moose and Sadie's. That's my spot.
That place is great for lunch and for coffee. It's right by where I work.
Some huevos rancheros.
I like the tuna.
What?
I like the tuna there.
What? Really?
Yeah, I'll be real with you.
Man,
I like the tuna. Grant, what's...
I don't even know you. I guess I haven't seen you in a while. Maybe I'm just catching up. It's a different wavelength today. I don't know. I love coffee. I drink it most days. But occasionally I'll just like not drink it for like 3 or 4 days. And then ride it out. I don't know. I make coffee here. I like a good French press. I'm not too snobby about what brand I'm buying. But I also enjoy like a good like Spy House. You know, we have a...
Spy House is great.
Good little craft spot here.
Couple of locations in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I was explaining that I was taking a death to stalk people around a little bit today, and I was there with David today, and I was like, this is kind of the place you come and you meet people you follow on Instagram. Like you say, hey, hey, there you are.
That's the best compliment slam I've ever heard about a coffee place.
Yeah, good times. But anyway, big kind of coffee. I will say I've been trying to do more like tea, like, and I've been loving like a fruity tea, like a pomegranate tea at night.
You know, I've always said about tea that I love it, and in a different world where coffee wasn't so amazing, I would drink tea all the time. Tea suffers from the fact that it's just not quite as good as coffee, in my opinion.
I bet now if you drew that and scanned it in and posted it, you would get lots of
okay,
love for
so
your thing.
Here's an interesting thing.
I'm doing that tonight, by the way.
Please do. Vince, I will not hear one more promise you make on air to send me
I swear to God, you'll get it. Oh, five sec, you'll get it tonight.
Stop.
Believe it. All right.
We'll confirm or deny that later. Okay, so let's get back into visualize because
All right, that was a good off-topic topic. Yeah. Let's wrap the show. Let's do
it.
Last
thoughts. We did. That was fantastic. But hold on. I just want to talk to you about this. So I think of like some of the best like concept people, and you're very, very concept driven, obviously.
Yes.
Which is like one of, I feel like there's like a breed of high artists among advertisers that are just concept people, like true concept people through and through, that find a way to visualize their concepts. You know, I think of locally, and this is totally worth looking up because their work is so fucking good.
Show notes.
Like Adi Schwen, he was on our show. David Schwen, amazing. And Brock Davis, he goes by Laser Bread sometimes, I think. I don't know.
We'll shout out to him.
Yeah, too. And then Phil Jones. Like those three, to me, are like in Minneapolis. They're so good. They're just concept. And they find a way to execute or visualize whatever their concept is in different mediums. And of course, that is like the goal of even advertising, but so rarely does that seem to actually work. How, like, what, and I tried to get this out of Dishwin too, and I know there's no magic formula, but what is your just like your idea capture process look like? Like, do you take note? Like, I'm not looking for an answer for me. I'm just curious about like what your rituals look like around, you know, recording your ideas, or, you know, do you set aside a specific time to create and execute on them? Do you have a list, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm a very eavesdroppy person. So I will lurk places and just listen to things. And when it feels kind of covert or like you hear something you shouldn't, that makes it super memorable. So it doesn't matter if it's not important. Like somebody's on the phone like, oh yeah, I'll get eggs and milk and what else do I need to pick up? But you're still listening to something that you shouldn't be. And then you don't really have to take notes on it. You can come home and think about it again. Like, oh yeah, I heard that weird conversation, or this happened, and I don't know if I should have seen that. And that stuff for me is a really good jumping off point for concepting anything.
Dope.
That's actually so good.
I mean, that reminds me of just like writing. I love like writing in planes, trains, wherever. It's coffee shops too, but you just hear these little snippets that honestly you can't think of because they're just real and weird.
You just have to plagiarize them. Otherwise, there's nothing, no other way you'd come up with them.
Yeah, reality is probably the weirdest thing.
Well, I was stuck in an airport a couple years ago, and I just started like typing up like little bits of things I'd heard. And before, like, I was just stuck there for like 12 hours. And when I left, I had like a whole book of poems about like weirdos people like in the airport. Like, there's just so much weirdness.
Oh yeah, that's so
good. I would buy a book of that, honestly.
Yeah.
It's, you can get it at ribbonpig.ca. It's a really small little art house place.
It is a thing. Okay, awesome.
That's even better.
Hold on. We heard another promise. I would buy a book of that. So, Vince.
That's before I knew that a book like that existed. No, that sounds awesome. And you know what it actually is?
You have to buy a copy.
I have to know. You honestly do. I do. I'm stuck. But it somehow perfectly segues us into what we like to do to wrap the show each week, which is ask our guests two questions. And so if you would be so kind as to answer these in order, Jessica.
Okay.
They are, first, how can our listeners support you? And second, if you would want our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would you want it to be?
If your listeners want to support me, they can Google me on any sort of search they find and pick up something that I've made along the way of this internet fun time that I've had. And if there's one thing I'd probably want them to take away, it's that everybody's a little bit more creative and has a little more bullet points on their resume than they think they do. And you're qualified already.
Wow. That's absolutely in the ethos of like what we're trying to do here, which is empower people if we can to do things, create things, ship things. And I think you vocalized it as well as I could have. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, that's your go with that.
Exactly, yeah. As well as I could in my wildest dreams. So well done. And yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, awesome. Maybe you could sign us off, Jessica?
Is there a siren going on?
Yeah.
So the place we record at is actually right next door to HCMC, which is the Hennepin County Medical Center, which is the largest hospital in Minneapolis. So, you would get a lot of sirens. But we shout out quickly to our awesome sound guy, Pat, who is just awesome. And he always takes them out of the final product.
And yeah, sometimes we don't do a sign off. We just do a siren off, and we cue the medical. We call
911 And we get the ambulance leave. No, so we may or may not hear this on the final. But would you please, Jessica?
Super fun episode. Honestly,
yeah, this has been so good. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. We like to sign off the same way every week, which is with our little mantra, which is ship it. If it doesn't ship, it isn't art. So if you would do us the completely exalted honor of shipping us out, that would be, you know, that would be great.
All right. So ship it, and if it doesn't ship, it isn't art.
Well, yes, but it's just the first part.
Oh, there's more?
No. It's just ship it. I'm sorry. I ruined this. Jessica.
I thought you were going to set me up to say something embarrassing, and I was totally just going to say it. So.
Oh, no.
Sweet, yeah.
I should have, but
instead. Take your pants off and go make stuff.
It's a podcast. No one knows.
It's true, honestly.
We're all pantsless at all times.
One of the perks of freelance life.
I think this is a wrap, then.
How about maybe a draw it? Could we try a alternative version? I'd love to hear that.
Okay. I like that.
Or maybe a visualize it, because that just could be in any medium.
Yeah, well, you can ship things in 1,000 ways. You can post it or mail it or... Actually, those are all really nice synonyms. Yeah, I had a pen over on the corner.
You can click it?
Do you want me to...
No, there we go. No, we got it. We got it.